Hello and welcome to All Inclusive Solutions. Today our guest is Emily Yates.
Hello, Emily. Lovely to meet you.
Lovely to meet you too, Tom.
Thank you so much, Emily, for joining us. Emily, we met last year when, you know, I approached Visit England saying I'd love to contribute from the dementia community's perspective into the accessible toolkit that was being developed. And, you know, you were the and continue to be the person who is leading that initiative, pulling together all of the different adaptations that are important to all the different disabled communities. And, you know, that's what excited me when I spoke to you, because you were in that position where you could highlight those things that if organisations just made those simple changes, the impacts those would make to so many people's lives. But, you know, the other end of it is, gosh, you know, so many different people with different views, consolidating that into, you know, one set of guidelines, you know, wow, that's a challenge. But, you know, before we go on to speak about the topic, it would be lovely, Emily, for you to introduce yourself to our listeners and, you know, tell us about, you know, the different work you've done supporting accessibility.
Absolutely. Hi, Carol, and hi, Tom, and hi, listeners. It's really lovely to be here. My name's Emily Yates. I am a wheelchair user with cerebral palsy, and I work for an inclusive design agency called MIMA, which stands for micro and macro, so looking in at the detail and then out into the bigger picture of that end-to-end journey. And I head up their accessibility and inclusive design team. And the work that we do focuses on physical, social, and digital accessibility and inclusive design for disabled people and those with other protected characteristics. So I absolutely agree with everything that you've said there about inclusivity and the importance of it and looking into, but also beyond disability wherever possible. And we do everything from conducting access audits to facilitating lived experience user groups and delivering disability awareness training for lots of different clients, but mostly in the transport and travel, culture and heritage, and global events sectors.
Brilliant. And I know you've also been involved in supporting accessibility in different countries and involved yes. with the Paralympics. Would you like to share a little bit about what you did in those areas?
Absolutely. So before I joined MIMA, I was a freelance access consultant for about 8 years. And that journey started really holistically and really organically. I'd finished university and I was volunteering at the London 2012 Olympic and Paralympic Games and was then invited by the British consulate to go over to Rio de Janeiro, where, of course, the 2016 Games were held, and was asked to give a bit of a presentation about myself and my life and the work that I'd done as a disabled person, and was then offered the opportunity to do some consultancy work with Metro Rio, the underground transport system that serviced the city, and they were looking to build a new line to the Olympic Park that was being built. So it was a really organic, amazing opportunity that really led me to access consultancy. And I took everything that I'd learned back with me to the UK and continued some work there. But I've also done quite a lot of work with self-service accommodation, specific accessibility venues and accommodations where, you know, I'm sure you'll both be aware of this. Families perhaps have a child that's disabled and they really realise the difficulties in going out and travelling as a family. So they decide to set up their own thing with all the brilliant mods and cons surrounding accessibility. And it's been really, really nice to get involved in some of those smaller, more personal projects that mean a heck of a lot and have such a huge impact on people. So whilst I'll probably be talking a little bit about those big projects, it's also really important to recognise and remember those smaller ones that really, really do matter.
Emily, how did you find the... I presume you weren't staying on the Olympic Park all the time over in Rio, and perhaps you're in the hotel structures in Rio, maybe. How did you find the attitudes to disability from the Brazilians compared to here in the UK?
Oh, great question. I think it's quite easily answered with one distinction. In terms of physical access, there really wasn't all that much, especially when I went in 2014. It may well have changed and improved since then, but difficulties with a lack of drop curbs, for example, and crossing the road, simple things that you would expect in terms of travel were quite difficult as a wheelchair user. But I do have to say that operationally and socially, the way that people's mindsets were around disability and accessibility and just mucking in and helping wherever that was required was really amazing and really beautiful. So I think that in comparison with the UK, there's almost like a stark contrast. Our physical access is better, theirs isn't. But actually, operationally and socially, there's a lot that we could learn from Brazilians in terms of just getting on with it and helping and not having this reserved attitude of not knowing what to do, so not doing anything at all, that, let's be honest, we do quite a lot of here.
So do you feel you've carried any of that into this accessibility toolkit?
I like to think so, yeah. I mean, we've got a whole section in the toolkit around the importance of providing an inclusive welcome, and that was one that Carol spent a lot of time reviewing and helping to input into as well. And I like to think that, yes, a lot of the toolkit is about those proactive little things that you can do that don't cost a lot of money but make a huge difference in changing your attitude, being really positive and having a positive thought process and reaction and action around disability and other protected characteristics, yeah.
Your comment about the cultural differences, to me, is also exemplified by the fact that Brazil want to have the sunflower as their logo for disabilities, unlike ourselves. So it shows quite a different reflection. So all-inclusive toolkit for Visit England. You know, we've mentioned it. Would you like to describe to our listeners what it is?
Absolutely. I'll try my very best. So at the end of 2022, Visit England put out a public tender for a consultancy to bid in order to be almost the author of this accessible and inclusive tourism toolkit specifically for businesses, small to medium-sized tourism businesses, specifically in the areas of accommodation, attractions, food and beverage, and events. And the whole point of the toolkit was to provide, as I mentioned earlier, those kind of holistic, operational top tips and quick wins that you could provide as a business without spending a lot of money, without having to create extra resource, and without having to find time that you simply do not have. The point of the toolkit was also to then create some supplementary tools, whether that's an action checklist that allows somebody to create notes, put ownership behind certain actions, give certain elements of accountability, and really just be able to say, okay, in 3 months, I'll have done A, B, C, and D. And then in a year's time, I might have done another 4 or 5 different things on this list. And also accompanying that is a technical appendix where, let's be honest, a lot of businesses won't be able to do much with this immediately, but if you suddenly have money to refurbish or you're moving into a new premises and you want to really hit all those aspirations in terms of built environment accessibility, whether it's something like a height of a desk or inclusively designed seating or the clear width of access routes or the colour contrast between walls and floors, that technical guidance would supply those dimensions, those measurements that you would need to implement in order to be as exemplary as you possibly could. So this real mix of technical guidance, but also those more operational quick wins, There's also sections in the toolkit around the importance of inclusive recruitment, how to market your business more inclusively, the importance of learning about specific impairments and access requirements so you can really understand how to better cater for a customer or better employ a member of staff, and lots and lots of different things that businesses, hopefully, regardless of where they are in that accessibility journey, will be able to relate to. They'll be able to take a couple of top tips and think, okay, I'm really going to run with those and action those. And that's the aim of the game, for progress to be the focus rather than perfection, but for everybody to feel confident in making change and doing the right thing.
Yeah, and I think, as you highlight, Emily, there's top tips so organizations can dip in very quickly and get a taster.
Yep.
Or if they really want to delve in and create the most inclusive environment and experience possible, then they have all that detail. So it is for both aspects. And I think that's,
absolutely,
to me, what makes it quite different, because other guides can simply be very detailed for one particular adaptation, whereas this hopefully simplifies it for businesses to become more inclusive.
Oh, that's really nice. Thank you, Carol.
I was absolutely going to say that, Carol and Emily, the top tips or sort of quick wins almost are really useful in a document that's really, really comprehensive. Why did you feel that this was needed now? Why do you feel it's a step forward from what's been there before?
I think, as Carol alluded to, there's a lot of disparate information out there. So more often than not, you can find some information that you're looking for, and you can get a bit of guidance on what you might need to do. But so often that information might be in three or four different documents, and it might actually be in three or four documents that are for three or four different audiences as well. So you're reading a very technical document for a contractor versus a more holistic piece for a business owner, for example. And the aim of this was to really consolidate all of that information in one place that, as you both stated very well, that it can be dipped in and out of. I think also interestingly, and it would be nice to know what you two think about this, as an access consultant, it's a really, really interesting, exciting, vibrant time to be working in this industry, because suddenly it's almost like there's an understanding that accessibility isn't just about wheelchair users. It isn't just about front-facing services. There is so much more depth and nuance to all of it, and to getting it right and to pushing further with it. And I really think one thing I'm really proud of is that I think this toolkit really showcases that. Within this toolkit, we've spoken with and consulted with over 30 disability charities, trade associations and independent reviewers. And within this are dozens and dozens of different case studies from different businesses that are doing something really, really well. They might not be doing everything perfectly, but they're doing something really, really well. And to be able to showcase that and show what a real move in the right direction accessibility and inclusive design is having, I think is a really exciting thing to be able to do, and something that arguably hasn't been done before quite in this way.
No, yeah, and I think really gives it the gravitas, and that, I think, also then attracts investment into this sector of the travel industry, because it's a sort of sector that's been long ignored. Carol will know better than the two of you know better than me, but I think, if you have this sort of report that's spoken to the people out there, the users, the providers, real case studies, people believe that much more than just a boring document telling you what to do. So that really has that human feeling to it.
Yeah, and for me, I think pulling together all those groups, is fantastic. Were there common themes that came across all those groups when you were speaking to them individually that, you know, you were surprised about?
There were definitely common themes. I think the one that wasn't surprising, but the one that I was really, really pleased to hear consistently was this need for flexibility and choice in order to create autonomy and independence. And this ability that, okay, even if you aren't able to be independent and you require support, there's flexibility and choice in design for that as well. And that really came through strongly from absolutely everybody that we spoke to. And I think has a real nice reflection on hopefully where the industry is going in the future. Whether you're talking about tourism, culture and heritage, transport and travel, it's all, you know, going, hopefully, I'd like to think, in that right positive direction. I think another thing that came through that was very, very interesting was how we utilise language, both within the toolkit and how we speak about it and how we market it, and the need to think a little bit more deeply around that. So we've put within this toolkit quite obviously that yes, we are focusing on disabled people, but we're also focusing on people with accessibility requirements, people that might require support and actually don't consider themselves to be disabled whatsoever, and really bringing in a bigger group of people that businesses should be considering and thinking about that goes further than someone with a piece of mobility equipment with them.
Definitely.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that's why, you know, the All Inclusive podcast is about that. And it's about recognising, you know, the broad group of people that can benefit from adaptations, because, you know, parents with young children in prams, you know, older adults, you know, who don't necessarily, you know, associate with having any disabilities. That's just part of growing older. So, you know, specific changes that people make can improve, you know, such a large number of people. And that's what's great. You know, I really like that it's a live document. It's evolving, because that is, to me, what inclusivity is about. We're learning all the time. You know, as you said, you met people when you were in Rio who, you know, helped problem solve, you know, situations and supported you. You know, how do you see the toolkit evolving in the future with the feedback and response you've had so far?
I would like to think that as different businesses and different organisations learn about models and theories like the Purple Pound, like the social model, like spoon theory, and the importance of providing for people with non-visible impairments that might have chronic fatigue and benefit from a dwell space or benefit from pre-visit information. I'd like to think that the toolkit will develop in a sense that things like having accessibility guides and pre-visit information on websites becomes more common knowledge and more of a baseline thing to do. And then we can start focusing a little bit more on how to create that flexibility and choice in design, such as how do you provide suitable, bright, visible contrast for somebody who's partially sighted, but also provide an environment with a neutral palette for somebody who's neurodivergent and might benefit from an environment such as that. I would love to think that the toolkit would help us get to a point where we're having those interesting, developed, nuanced conversations, and that things like providing information prior to a visit is something that is just done as standard. That's what I hope for.
I mean, I think it's really interesting that you mentioned about, you know, chronic fatigue, or, you know, there's a whole raft of conditions which not only include physical issues, but psychological issues, emotional issues. You know, we've got the depressions, we've got the, you know, the cognitive impairment from the, you know, starting with the dementia, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it's there's one chance to make a good impression, isn't there? Mm-hmm. And if somebody, for example, with depression has a poor experience on one holiday, they're just not going to go again, in my experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I would totally agree with that. And I think that's where the important distinction between physical, social and digital accessibility comes in. It is not good enough to just focus on the built environment anymore and to just focus on clearing pathways and providing adequate seating and those kind of elements. That can only be a good thing when it's supported by good perceptions around disability and other protected characteristics, when it's accompanied by good staff training, good operational accessibility, where, for example, I went to a bar in Dublin a couple of weeks ago with two of my friends, and we left to go and do a cocktail making class and came back, and the table that we were sat at was reserved for us with no prior warning whatsoever. Somebody had just said, okay, these girls are coming back, this table really suited them, and we're going to provide that for them. That's good social access. They had to make no changes whatsoever to their infrastructure, but they made our night better by just thinking ahead a little bit. That's what I think is really important and can be especially shown within tourism venues and experiences where it can't necessarily elsewhere. So that's where tourism, in my mind, and visitor experience can really shine.
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, that's why I focused on working with the travel, tourism and hospitality industry, because good hospitality is understanding the individual and understanding how you allow them to enjoy themselves with the experience and environment that you are offering to them. And I also think by more people using all of those places to go and enjoy themselves, it breaks down barriers and people learn much more about one another. But, you know, you've obviously been involved in lots of interesting things. You know, what else would you at a personal level like to achieve in the accessibility space?
Oh, that's a big question, Carol. What else would I like to achieve within the accessibility space? I think, you know what? I've been discussing this a little bit with our managing director as well. One of my worries that I have is that as accessibility rightfully gets bigger and gains more traction, it of course becomes more in the commercial world and in commercial settings. And that's right, and that's exactly how it should be, and I want to be clear on that. You know, there is a space for accessibility consultants and for accessibility as a discipline to become a much bigger thing than it currently is. But my worry with that is that will move focus away from those smaller family-run businesses that I mentioned earlier that won't have tens of thousands of pounds to undertake an access audit or have disability awareness training every year or something like that. And my focus, I would like to hope, is that I would like accessibility to get all the traction it deserves, absolutely, but I hope we can do it in a way that doesn't remove focus from the people at grassroots levels that are doing really wonderful stuff that deserves to be celebrated. And I hope that we can create a balance between servicing all those big global projects like the Metro in Rio, but we can also be with that little family-run B&B in West Wales that are doing a phenomenal job.
Thanks, Emily. Completely and utterly, you know, agree with that last sentiment about making sure everybody's perspective, particularly those small organisations and families, are taken into consideration for inclusivity, because it's evolving all the time and we can't exclude anybody's knowledge and learning and how they apply it. Thank you very much, Emily. So we're in our final segment of the podcast and we have some quick fire questions for Emily. Just got reactions, please, Emily. The first one I'll kick off with. What's the single most important thing that makes a holiday great for you?
Oh, good company. Every single time. It's not where I go, it's who I go with.
Fantastic. Nice. Couldn't one. Agree more.
Agree completely. All right, Emily, what's the silliest situation you've been in on a holiday? And, you know, did you learn anything from it or how did you survive? Whichever way you want to answer it.
I mean, most of those situations involve alcohol, so I don't know how we feel about that. I've had many a night out where I've not ended up in my wheelchair. Let's put it that way. I've ended up more on the floor.
separated from your wheelchair.
Yes.
That's a good name.
Brilliant. So, Emily, next question. What is the quirkiest or strangest place you've ever stayed in?
I think often nature is deemed as inaccessible, so I've always really enjoyed it when I've found like an accessible yurt or tent or cabin scenario where I can really feel at one with nature and just sit with my book.
Amazing. And finally, a question we're going to ask everybody. Why do you think it's important for people to consider the concept of inclusivity for all?
I think ultimately because it affects us all. And one thing that I say quite often around disability in particular is that there's no such thing about as disabled and non-disabled people. There's only disabled and not yet disabled people. Mm. So I think the more we all understand that inclusivity, whether it's design, whether it's operations, whatever it may be, affects us all, the better, and hopefully the more traction we can get in this whole thing.
That's brilliant. Well, we must thank you, Emily, for your really, really interesting conversation and discussion. And we'd like to thank our listeners for pitching in and listening. And we'd love to hear some reactions from you.
Thank you.
Amazing. Thanks, and thank Emily. You both so much for having me. Thank you.